the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
The crypto industry in South Africa is maturing. We know this because the licensing process by the FSCA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, attracted more than 300 applications with some 256 licenses already issued. And it's not just crypto exchanges that are participating. Law firms, auditors, fund managers, and arbitrage providers are also now licensed. The Crypto Asset Association of South Africa, or CASA, is an industry body entirely voluntary that represents the interests of crypto asset service providers and their clients. One of the things they do is operate a scam alert to warn customers of new crypto scams that pop up, and they happen quite frequently. It also fosters ethical conduct and advocates on issues like regulation and legislation. So, what have we learned about the crypto industry over the last few years? And is it in fact maturing? To help us understand this, we're joined by Brent Peterson, chair of CASA. Hi, Brent. Thanks very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. CASA now has 34 members, I believe. So that's quite a representative sample of the crypto industry in South Africa. Maybe you can answer that question. What have we learned about the crypto industry in the last few years?
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks so much for having me. And I'm happy to answer that question. So I think that as a start off, it's important to note that the crypto asset industry was a niche and largely unregulated market in South Africa, which was dominated by a small group of early adopters who operated either as crypto asset exchanges, investment trading platforms, and other crypto-related businesses. But consequently, the crypto industry has grown exponentially as more individuals and businesses have actually entered the space. And this rapid expansion has come with its own set of concerns and pitfalls given the increase in scams, money laundering, and fraudulent and illicit activities involving crypto assets. So South Africa has experienced its fair share of major crypto scams, you know, such as Mirror Trading International and AfriCrypt as examples. But the consequences resulted in a significant loss suffered by consumers and investors and has given the entire crypto industry a bad reputation. So as things stand, I think the lack of the regulatory oversight at that time led to major concerns about consumer protection and financial stability as a whole. And this has resulted in a call for a movement from an unregulated to a regulated industry. And in response to this, we know that the Financial Sector Conduct Authority and the Financial Intelligence Center have implemented measures to ensure that the rapidly evolving world of crypto assets operates within a legal and regulated framework, which is the financial industry. So, but I think as a point of departure, you know, this publication, you know, commenced with a position paper in 2021 with the IFWG, the Crypto Asset Working Group, setting forth the roadmap and specific FATF recommendations on how crypto assets will be regulated and rolled out in a phased approach in South Africa. And then next came crypto assets being included as a financial product under the FASE Act, which squarely falls within the domain of the FSCA. And we know that they are tasked with actually regulating the crypto asset service provider and the activity, not the crypto asset itself. So, and then we've got FIC also that has required cash to register as accountable institutions for AML and CFT purposes. And, you know, given that movement from unregulated to regulated, the crypto asset industry was effectively formed because we are now required to operate within an existing and highly developed financial industry. And there was this clear need for CASPs to establish an association to navigate this collectively and advance the crypto industry as a whole. So it was our interest to do this, you know, given the business activities of our members that vary from crypto exchanges, arbitrage providers, crypto intermediary service providers dealing with remittances and payments, crypto mining, fund managers, multi-sig security solutions, and associate advisors. So for us as CASA, you know, it's our mission to try and develop market integrity and ethical practices amongst CASP, complemented by a productive relationship and communication with regulatory authorities to promote the growth of a robust local crypto asset ecosystem that strives to educate and promote or protect consumers and investors while driving innovation. So I think there has definitely been a lot that we've learned, and especially now that we've moved from the unregulated to the regulated, we've got to keep our wits about us as, you know, crypto asset service providers.
And one of the things that you're doing as CASA, of course, is lobbying. You have to represent the interests of your members, the 34 members that we spoke about in the beginning. So we now have a licensing regime. But I think the market is so rapidly evolving. If you look at the growth of stablecoins, for example, there's a market cap now, I believe it's in excess of $160 billion in stablecoins alone, stablecoins like Tether and USDC. And I don't know that the regulators quite had their wits wrapped around that at the time that these regulations were put in place. So what else is coming in terms of regulation that you're looking at?
Yeah, no, thanks, Kieran. I think at this stage, you know, from a CASA viewpoint, we are still attempting to lobby the regulators, right? I mean, we have a voice that needs to be heard on existing issues that's impacting the crypto industry. And what I mean by that is CASA comprises of CASP that are mostly startups. Some of them are medium-sized entities, and we have two large CASPs. And, you know, the individuals behind these entities are super smart. They are well-respected amongst their peers in the industry, because they have a deep understanding of the regulatory framework, and they've been involved in this space for some time and clearly understand some of the pain points that exist to them as CASPs being required to operate effectively in a legacy and a traditional financial industry. So from a CASA viewpoint, we have written to the regulators on several issues, you know, some of them such as exchange control regulations, the tricky events relating to the externalization of capital, and most recently, and a hot topic is obviously the travel rule. With that said, we are not looking too far down the road when it comes to regulation, as we are trying to deal with the issues that are on our doorstep so that our concerns as industry players can be heard and taken into account as the industry evolves. So, I mean, from my viewpoint, you know, we live in a country where we have an established legal and regulatory framework, and we understand that the regulators are committed to using the existing framework. But me, I believe as an attorney by heart that in this country, regulation is designed to create some basic parameters and also to allow CASPs to have the freedom to innovate and try new things within that, and also allow people who desire to participate as investors or purchasers have that freedom as well. So that understanding also comes with the responsibility to comply with the rules and regulations as it stands. And those rules should not be overly prescriptive, rather principle-based, to adhere to those objectives that are set out in the legislation. So CASA members understand that, right? But there is a need for a better collaboration and harmonization with the regulators and industry players. I mean, on the issue of stablecoins, this is also something new, you know. As you are aware, in the recent budget review concerning stablecoins, it was noted by the IFWG their plans to release a paper on this year, specifically addressing stablecoin regulation. And I think this paper will probably be significant for lawmakers and regulators to consider as they work to establish regulations within the crypto asset landscape. However, it is essential to understand that the crypto asset class itself cannot be regulated due to its inherent characteristics, rather the CASPs or the VASPs that can be subject to regulation as evidenced by, you know, the existing licensing regimes. So there is a possibility that separate regulation for stablecoin issuers may be developed, similar to approach taken by, you know, the markets in crypto assets MiCA framework in Europe, which imposes specific requirements on stablecoin issuers. In South Africa, there are several stablecoin issuers. It's a current low liquidity and limited usage at this stage. And that kind of suggests that the immediate regulatory focus on stablecoins may not be advantageous, despite potential regulatory development in the future. But as for upcoming regulations, the FEC has not indicated any specific changes on the horizon, but there is a pressing need for not just supervision, but a more robust monitoring of compliance. And I think additionally as well, that the FSCA needs to consider, you know, requiring or even looking at statutory audits for financial service providers holding higher license categories, because it raises concerns that, you know, some orders may lack the necessary expertise in crypto assets, which could compromise the integrity, as I understand it, of the audit opinions related to blockchain-based assets. And there's also, you know, we also discussed the need for integration for regulations and other laws such as income tax and exchange control, as well as other practical implications dealing with cryptocurrency or crypto assets rather. And I think these kind of highlights the challenges, you know, that we need to deal with. I would even say that there's another element that we need to at least mention is about integration. It's all good and well we have a licensing regime in place and that the FSC has implemented that and their FSP license, but we need to start seeing an integration of these regulations into how crypto asset service providers operate, the level of communication that needs to be done, dealing with reporting relating to income tax, exchange control, and these practical implications of what it means when you even take an investment in crypto assets.
Talk about gray listing. Crypto is seen as a potentially weak point when it comes to money laundering, anti-money laundering. This is one of the reasons that we were placed on the gray list by the Financial Action Task Force. And also terrorism finance. There's concerns about this. Now, the licensing regime is probably the biggest move in the crypto industry to satisfy the Financial Action Task Force. How are CASPs going to solve this problem? You know, or do you think that the licensing regime has achieved that already?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good question. I mean, you know, South Africa's grey listing has resulted in effectively a pressure to reform, increased scrutiny, economic delays. So there is a call to action from FATF to strengthen our existing financial systems. But I think this, in the context of CASPs, you know, the FATF has highlighted the scrutiny over our existing financial system, particularly regarding issues like money laundering and terrorist financing. We all know that. But crypto assets are often viewed as a potential weak point in these frameworks, but have started to attract more attention from regulators and financial sectors alike. I mean, for crypto asset service providers, they are taking various measures to enhance compliance and mitigate risks associated with money laundering. So I definitely think CASPs are helping to solve that, right? I mean, we've got CASPs operate with the know your client or know your customer, know your business. CASPs are implementing stringent KYC or KYB processes requiring their users to verify their identities before they can even engage in crypto transactions. So this helps in tracing transactions back to identifiable individuals. I think another very important thing that CASPs have is the transaction monitoring, the internal transaction monitoring controls. Many providers utilize, you know, advanced analytics to monitor transactions in real time for suspicious activity. And this allows them to flag and report any irregularities or suspicious activities or even report suspicious transactions that occur. And that I've seen in practice has assisted and deterred many instances of, you know, money laundering taking place or real concerns relating to scam-related activities so that we can protect the consumer. I mean, that's what we're there for, right? We are there to protect the consumer, look out for their interests. And I think another important aspect is that CASPs have something to bring to the table, particularly with regulatory bodies, particularly with banks, because we are trying to increasingly work with governments and agencies to align the local regulations and international standards to ensure that we are on the right side of compliance, but we also can give added value to the banks relating to concerns of scam-related activities and even the regulators to assist them when they need to consider how these things need to be dealt with, because CASPs are dealing with this on a daily basis. I think another very important thing is education and training. Many CASPs are also focusing on educating the users about the risks and the responsibilities that are associated with crypto assets, trying to reinforce the importance of compliance and ethical behavior. And I think also another thing is implementing best practice. I mean, CASPs, you know, they are, like I said, they are super smart people. They completely, the individuals completely understand what the regulatory framework requires of them. And they are always trying to innovate and trying to adopt the best practice from a traditional financial institutions, you know, obviously, again, dealing with money laundering, dealing with combating the financing of terrorism. And we have these policies in place. So CASPs are building frameworks that strengthen the integrity of the crypto asset ecosystem. And I think these efforts aim not only to protect themselves, you know, from regulatory repercussions, but also to support the overall goal of maintaining a secure and trustworthy financial landscape in South Africa.
Now, there's the new travel rule, which is coming into effect at the end of April 2025, which many people say means the end of crypto privacy in South Africa. It's a new rule basically requiring CASPs, that's crypto asset service providers, to collect and share information when facilitating crypto transfers above 5,000 Rand. So this is it's a costly exercise, and I've spoken to many of the exchanges. They have to purchase software or lease software. That basically you cannot accept transfers from abroad or from another exchange where that person that is sending the money has not been KYC'd themselves. So you're getting this this interlocking system here where everybody who's dealing in the crypto space is going to be KYC. There's going to be an identity on both sides of a transaction, in other words. Is this going to inhibit the growth of the crypto industry in your view?
Well, look, I think it's the implementation of the travel rule by the 30th of April 2025 is a real big thing. You know, us as CASA, we are in the process of establishing a dedicated subcommittee to delve into the travel rule and the many considerations that need to be taken into account. I mean, we had our CASA meeting yesterday, and we took a deep dive into this, and the various members opted to join in this. And it's because, again, CASA comprises of majority of startups and some medium-sized entities. And to implement the travel rule, they might not necessarily have the in-house resources, skills, or expertise to be able to actually develop something like that. So what options are they left with? They're left with either outsourcing that service to a third-party service provider, which comes at a significant cost. Now, while we understand why the travel rule needs to be implemented, obviously, recommendation or requirement or directive, rather, from FATF, the point is that crypto asset service providers were just recently licensed. We went through a stringent process in terms of obtaining our license, where we had to, you know, provide and demonstrate that we've got the internal monitoring controls, what compliance methods and resources we have, all those things in a highly regulated financial industry. So we've managed to get over that particular line. Now we need to deal with enhanced compliance or further requirements that deal with the travel rule. So I think in my view, you know, it definitely has the potential to inhibit growth, which is definitely real, as CASPs only, relatively speaking, have come under regulation in terms of the FSCA, but also having to deal with these requirements after having received their license. So as things stand right now, Kieran, we are sitting in a situation where we have actually reached out to FIC to deal with this issue. On the 12th and 13th of March, there was a crypto asset regulation and compliance conference that was held in Johannesburg, where one of the senior legal individuals in FIC presented their reasoning for the travel rule. And there were some questions that was asked. And I at least had the opportunity to kind of deal with this, because the biggest risk is, right, if you don't comply by that particular date, you will face sanctions. Now, that creates a real fear of the future for crypto asset service providers, because we just got our license and now we are now required to comply with the travel rule, which is further obligations, further costs that need to be incorporated into our business. So as things stand right now, our intention as CASA subcommittee is to deal with the identified issues, such as requirements to deal with vague guidance, because we've requested clarity on certain things. There are multiple methodologies which are used by international players, dealing with a critical issue of how we share the KYC transaction information of our customers safely and securely between the CASPs, how to deal with different systems, and also costly exercises versus open source integrations. And these are just some of the examples and the issues that we are facing. So while I understand the purpose of why the travel rule needs to be implemented, there is definitely a need for an engagement with FIC so that we can explain the challenges and the difficulties that the startup CASPs face. And at least there was a positive after the Crypto Asset Regulation and Compliance Conference. We received news that, you know, they've heard our concerns, and we were fortunate enough for FIC actually to reach out to CASA, wanting to call for a special meeting so that they can understand the challenges that we are facing. So that seemed very promising for us, but it's very important to kind of strike a balance between responsible innovation and versus sustainable growth and compliance within the industry.
So do you see a possibility here that the end of April deadline might be delayed, or that there will be a period of onboarding? In other words, you've got 6 months or 12 months to comply, or is this going to be just a sudden, from one day to the next, you're going to have to comply? How's this going to play out?
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, I can't tell what the future may hold, but our hope is that there will be a deferment to allow a proper engagement between CASA and FIC. And I think the point of that deferment is we don't want to find ourselves in a position where we are going to be sanctioned for non-compliance. Remember, again, we are trying to adopt the best practice. We are doing everything reasonably possible that we can to comply. But the practicalities of it makes it very challenging. So we definitely need some sort of guidance and clarity from FIC on this particular issue. So, you know, prize A would definitely be a deferment with no sanctions that would be imposed, but that remains to be seen until such time we have a proper engagement with FIC in and during the course of this month.
Finally, Brent, CASA has a scam alert. I was looking at it in the last couple of days. This is where you basically alert the public on new scams that come up around cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin and so on. And I guess if we had that a few years ago, we might have saved a lot of people from losing money in Mirror Trading International and AfriCrypt and these other scams that have come around. How do you gather information about these scams? And I guess the answer would be fairly obvious, because you've got CASPs, you've got the crypto asset service providers who are servicing clients, so they would be the first people to be alerted to this. But is this and my other question would be, how are you disseminating this information to the broader market?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we definitely have the scam alert, and checking tools are used occasionally, but not as much as we would like. I think crypto, the members of CASA are obviously the first point of contact, and that is to share information amongst the members of the association to deal with potential scams, obviously to protect the consumers in that particular situation. You know, CASPs are at the forefront of crypto scams, and it's in our business that we are occasionally even being used by criminals to scam people. I mean, there are money mules that are being utilized on our platforms. So identifying scams and gathering information about scams becomes a task of identifying how our platforms are being abused by criminals. This is critical. So for us to identify or utilizing our transaction monitoring tools, our algorithms that help proactively identify, you know, fraudulent fund transfers. So ultimately, you know, there are many scams, people fall victim to this who are facilitated either through social media platforms where people are promised unlikely returns, you know, in a short turnaround time following a deposit. But the problem is sometimes that the people that are being scammed aren't even aware that the money that they are depositing is actually into a cash account. So, and the banks don't necessarily share that source of account details with CAPS. So it becomes problematic to prevent these, you know, third party deposits for some of our crypto asset service providers that operate exchanges. So I think, again, it's trying to build just a network of communication, putting measures in place amongst us as members to kind of keep the industry clean, deter bad actors. I mean, that's part of our mandate as CASA. To promote, you know, ethical practices and also to hold ourselves accountable. So I think that, you know, as things progress, we will definitely be able to use that more effectively as the industry moves forward. And for now, we don't disseminate that information to the broader market. It's purely dealt with internally with CASA because, of course, if there are scams, we're under immediate obligation to submit a SAR or a suspicious transaction report, and that information is provided to FIC. But just for the sake of, you know, the scammer not jumping to another platform or another exchange, we try and communicate that internally so that we can stop them on all potential fronts. So that's the intention of our crypto scam tool that we are using.
Okay, and if you need information on that, of course, you can visit the Crypto Asset Association of South Africa website. There is a scam alert there. Quite interesting. It shows you what are the new and ingenious methods people are discovering for lifting crypto out of your wallet. You want to be aware of these. But we're going to leave the conversation there. Thanks very much for joining us, Brent Peterson, who is the chair of CASA, the Crypto Asset Association of South Africa.
Thank you so much, Kaden. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.